हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, page 37.
Sri Krishna continued, absorbing the intelligence in me constitutes mental equilibrium, and complete discipline of the senses is self-control. Right, so these are Krishna's definitions. Means these are actually the definitions. We may give other definitions to them according to our own understanding, our own purposes. You know, generally that's the case, is there's some particular purpose. So we have our own definitions of these. Right? So, absorbing the intelligence in Krishna, so you're conscious of Krishna, using the intelligence to analyze and see how Krishna is there, how to see everything connected to Krishna. And when you do see that, especially, then that's the, you know, mental equilibrium. Complete discipline of the senses is self-control. Right? So when the senses are under, means are kept, discipline means in line what they're supposed to do, then that is self-control. They do whatever they like to do, then that's not self-control. Tolerance means patiently enduring unhappiness. Right? So that's, because things come up that we don't, you know, appreciate. We can say, oh, someone insulted me or someone did behave badly. But the point is in that you're unhappy, right? If they insulted you and you were happy, then what's the problem? Right? So because, you know, so that means we're patient during unhappiness, whatever that may be. Because then if you say it's tolerating when someone's not dealing nicely with you and this and that, but then there's other things that are not. You know, it's just like, I say, you expected this for lunch and you got that. You know, so that not being upset, being patient, then that's tolerance. And steadfastness occurs when one conquers the tongue and genitals. Because then one becomes fixed, right? Because otherwise, the tongue and genitals is what takes it away in the one, right? Because we, from Upadeshamrita, then the tongue, belly, and genitals, they go in one direction, and then the words, the mind and anger in the other, right? These are the two ways it goes out, and one becomes distracted, right? So when the tongue is always taking prashad, the genitals then are engaged according to what is their natural, you know, position, then, okay, yeah, that's it. Shrila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Sama means fixing the intelligence in me. Mere peace without intelligence fixed in the Lord is rejected in this sama. Because others will, yogis will say, no, it's just being peaceful. But that's not enough, because you can't actually be peaceful unless you give up material consciousness. Right? Dhamma means control of one's own senses. Without controlling one's senses, one cannot hope to control one's disciples or others. Right? If you can't control yourself, you can't control others. That's the whole. That's the problem we're saying with the bureaucrats. They don't want to put in the effort, but they expect everybody else to put in the effort. Right? But the point is others will be inspired by their example to put in the effort how much they are. So if they're making everything individual and seeing it down to there and explaining to others how that is, it's a big trouble. But because of that, others will take the trouble to follow the direction and instruction. Otherwise, then who cares? That's why management has to keep expanding. Not that what you're managing is expanding, it just takes more and more people to do the same thing. Because no one wants to take any trouble. So you get it down to no trouble. Right? So you don't want any trouble making any decisions. It's just, here's the rule, we're applying it, you know, impersonally across the board, because that's easy. Problem is okay, we've solved that problem, but now we have so many papers coming across. And so that's a trouble for me, right? I've gotten rid of the trouble of having to apply it to the individual. Now it's done. But now so many papers are coming in based on all this. So now how do I resolve that? I get a secretary, right? And then they take care of that. But because there's so many things and you have to organize it like that, that saying what it should be doing, okay, that, you know, you don't mind doing. But to do it, then now you need an assistant secretary. Does that make sense? Now the assistant secretary, okay, they can do that, but then there's so many other things that need to be done, and so you need another assistant secretary. You know, one to run around and get the coffee and all that kind of jazz. You know, because if I'm going to sit here and deal with these papers, I'm only dealing with papers. I'm not going to deal with anything else. So you have to have someone else that does that run around. And like that, it just keeps going. It's unlimited how far it can go. You know? I mean, your perfection of this, I mean, how you say it, and the same way as that when Bhavananda Prabhu was saying that Calcutta is the cutting edge of cities in the world, and people say, what do you mean? You know, it's a dump. He says, yeah, exactly. That's what every other big metropolis is going to look like in the future. So it's already there today. Calcutta is the future of cities here today. Right? You don't even have to wait for Mad Max. It's already here, right? You know, like that. It's right? You know. So in the same way is that Bengali bureaucrats are the perfection of bureaucracy. Right? They come into the office, then they have to, you know, do this and that, then it's tea, right? Like that. And you don't they don't do anything during tea. Like that. You have to wait. Then when they finish tea, then there might be a few little this and that, then it's time for lunch. Then after lunch and that, there may be a little bit of this and that, then it's tea again. And then because after tea is a very short time until work's over, they're not going to do anything because they don't want to start something and not finish it, so therefore they'll do it tomorrow. So they've even perfected mañana more than the Mexicans. Like that.
And tomorrow is some kind of puja.
Huh?
And puja.
And
tomorrow is some kind of
puja. Yeah, and tomorrow is some kind of puja. Or it's close to, you know, puja, so then you have... Like that. Like it struck me this morning, you know how the electricity goes off at that funny time, like early in the morning?
Yeah.
It struck me as somebody comes in, you know, on their shift, and comes in, first thing you do is just turns the electricity off. You know, and it goes about setting up this and that, because they turn it back on in like a minute or two. It's kind of like, what was that for? You know, just let you know that they're there. I'm on the job. How do we know the guy's on the job? Because the electricity will go off. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Couldn't you say when finished simple life, start bureaucracy?
Sorry?
When finished simple life, then what? Start bureaucracy.
Ends, I thought you said finish simple life, meaning that we need to discuss with our Finn that was here. He's not here. Yeah, okay. When you finish simple life,
yeah,
then you get...
Yeah, of simple life, then you start bureaucracy.
But bureaucracy means you have to feel you're getting something done. It means you should feel you're getting something done, get the credit, get the authority, but do nothing. Mm. Or do at least minimal. Or at least whatever you do doesn't have any effect. Right? Yes.
Historically, Sri Pallad Prabhu Laskia, he explained that bureaucracy started as we know it. It always existed.
Right.
But as we know it, after the Industrial Revolution, that's when it got, like, roots down.
Okay. Yes.
Before it wasn't...
No, because you require bureaucracy, even though we say all these things about bureaucracy, it's required. How do governments work unless they have the people who do papers? They're known as kayasthas. So generally your best bureaucrats are someone from a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya background, but somehow or another they're not doing that. They're doing the shudra job of, you know, paper pushing. Because they'll do that better than a shudra will do. Because they have that intelligence, that cleverness. Because one of the purposes of them is they have to be able to write letters that are actually for the particular work that's there. So it takes someone clever to do that. You know, how to word it, how to do all these things. So that's the definition, and I think it's in Manu, or it's in Arthashastra, one or the other. Like that. So then, that's, it's always there. Governments always have them. Businessmen, if you're big, you always have a few, you know, your accountant and your few other guys like that. So you have. So it's just like in the temple, you have the treasurer, and then you have the cashier. So the cashier is a bureaucrat. Is that, you know, they said, no, you're not getting any money. You know, no, but I mean, you know, if we don't have the money, we can't buy the potatoes, we can't cook lunch today. He says, nope, they said no more money. You know, so they don't have to think. You know, it's just this, it works. And if you have a good bureaucracy, its leaders can be happy, because then there's certain things that people, you tell them, they just don't, they just keep harassing. Bureaucracies don't tolerate harassment. They just, you know, close the door or, you know, do something. They just turn off. Yeah, so it's important, but what we're discussing is that it's not important as leadership, because it never will be. You know? Because it's not meant for that. It's a shudra position to assist, you know, in whatever areas must Brahmin, Kshatriyas, or Vaishyas that they're assisting, you know, in kind of official kind of capacity. Is that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Proper leadership would be a Kshatriya position.
No, it would be Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya. Depends what you're leading in.
Dvija. Yeah.
It's a Dvija.
Yeah, okay.
Because they lead in education, they lead in administration, they lead in economics. Because bureaucrats can't do business. Yeah. Bureaucrats can't run a government. Bureaucrats can't run education. But they're there. You know, it's just like you go to a hospital, huge amount of bureaucracy is there. But it's not what makes the hospital work. In fact, that's the annoying part about it. You go to see the doctor, he's nice, he tells you this and that. But to get to see the doctor, and now once you've seen him to get your medicine or other things like that, you have to go through the bureaucrats. It drives you nuts. Right? Well, it's the people that can't talk, they run their own little thing. They get less money, but at least it's, you know, more humane.
And some of these international companies, they have managers that are ambitious to become leaders, you could say. But the problem is their mentality is very Vaishya-oriented, so they're not really able to protect, as they get more people under them, they're not really able to create a protected environment.
No, but they're supposed to create an environment of economics.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they can do that, it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that means all those people are getting money. They're getting money, the company's getting money, and those people are getting money, so everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As long as those people are happy, they work more. They're getting more money, but they're working more. Then the company gets more, and so then their position is secure, the manager's secure, and the company's secure.
Because
that's all they're trying to do is get profit. Now, in that, because they're people, then you have to deal with the personal element and this and that and all that kind of things. But it just has to function in that field. Now, for us, it's that and Krishna consciousness. So if of the two, better to get Krishna consciousness, because Krishna conscious people, then they'll do some nice stuff. But if you just do nice stuff and you're not Krishna conscious, what's the advantage of more money or more facility or
more distractions?
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tolerance, okay. Tolerance means tolerance of suffering prescribed by the scriptures, or tolerance of suffering from other beings who are disrespectful. Right? So you perform your activities, you know, that scripture says, the difficulties that are there from that, then that's tolerance. Right? Or if others are disrespectful, they don't deal right. So it means both of those aspects. So Krishna says simply that tolerance means patiently enduring unhappiness. So that can come from that doing your duties, that there's parts that are nice, parts that are not nice. Like the eating part is nice, the washing the dishes is not nice. You know, or the paying the bills is not nice, you know. Is that, you know, so you have to, yeah. Other attempts such as tolerating suffering from cold and heat are foolish. Right? Means it's just you do your service. So it's cold, you keep yourself warm. It's warm, you keep yourself cool. It's just a matter of how you, you can do your service. You know, if you love heat, and so then you don't have to keep yourself cool, then it works. Then there's a problem in the winter, right? You know? So that doesn't. We don't do that. It's not nothing separate. It's not separate from Krishna consciousness. Without controlling the tongue and genital, other types of steadiness are useless. Because you try to get if those aren't in place, you can't be steady in other things. It may seemingly that one can do certain things, but on the spiritual aspects, it won't be there. Even the material, it won't work very good. Right? One has to control these things. Like, let's say you're having a business, a power lunch. Now, if you're just worried about the eating, how much power is going to be happening? Right? So you have to be able to control and then see the mood. And, you know, so it works everywhere. Krishna continued. The greatest charity is to give up all aggression towards others. Right? So you're nice towards others. That's the best thing you can give. Right? Money is the next best. You know? Like that. And renunciation of lust is understood to be real austerity. Right? So the desire for sense gratification, giving that up, that is real austerity. Real heroism is to conquer one's natural tendency to enjoy material life. Right? So that's a hero. Right? Not the guy that yells and screams and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it says natural, it's interesting.
Natural tendency, yeah, to enjoy material life. Yeah. Yeah, so if you have no tendency to enjoy material life, you can't actually be a real hero. Right?
Somebody told Prabhupada, I have no sex desire at all. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, really? Something's wrong? What's wrong with you? You're sick or
Yeah, you always think there's a, oh wow, Prabhupada was really good at that. Whatever you'd say that was based on false ego and stuff like that, he'd always have this. You know, it's like that kid that wanted, what did he want? He wanted $1, oh, he wanted $5 to buy petrol to you know, burn himself alive. Prabhupada told the others he's crazy. And they say, yeah, he wouldn't burn himself and all that. No, he wanted $5. He says, you know, petrol at that time, I think, was 10 cents a gallon. So you know, a gallon's enough. He doesn't need more than 10 cents. Why is he asking for $5? He's so crazy, he doesn't even know, can't tell what's what. You know. Truthful means to speak the truth in a pleasing way. That's truth. Right? Because otherwise, nowadays, the more angry, the more rage, the more these kind of things, then that's supposed to be truth. But that's not truth, because it has to be pleasing. Because if you can say it pleasing, then it must be a fact. Otherwise, you have to use all the emotion to cover up whether it's real or not. Right? As declared by great sages. Okay, so they've declared. Cleanliness is detachment in fruit of activities. Right? Because then things are clean. So the more clean, that's why you see Brahmins can be clean, because they are detached from fruits of activities. And the more they're not, then the less that goes down. So that makes sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas renunciation is the sannyas order of life. Right, so everything's connected to Krishna. The true desirable wealth for human beings is religiousness. Right, because from that all wealth comes. So if you have religion, then the other things will come. And I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, am sacrifice. Right? So that means he is the Samkirtan movement. He is the yajnas. He is whatever there is. Right? Religious remuneration is devotion to the acharya with the purpose of acquiring spiritual instruction. Yeah, so that's real religious remuneration. Otherwise, then it's kind of business. Like, remember at Kumbh Mela, that one time, we were there, and this guy was coming around. He had this plate of sesame laddus, specifically sesame, you know. And he was going around to any sadhu and giving them how many they would take, like that. So you think that that's charity, but actually it's business. He's just trying to get rid of the sins that are connected with children by unloading it on them. And I guess he figures they have no children, so it doesn't matter. And the greatest strength is the pranayama system of breath control. Right? You control the breathing, then that's the greatest strength. Right? So then your energy, how it's being applied, like the life airs are being engaged in Krishna's service, that's the greatest strength. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Ritam means pleasant and truthful speech, not just speaking truthfully. Merely speaking truth includes announcing the faults of a person who has faults. How is that truth? That's uncultured. Right? So truth means cultured. In doing that, one criticizes a person. So it doesn't bring about any benefit. But that criticism is not agreeable to the devotee listeners. Because as the advancing Uttama, one of the qualities is they have no interest in finding faults in others. You know, you're in the material world, of course there's faults. You know, there's no interest. That criticism lacks a pleasing presentation of truth. But previous teachers have defined satyam as proper conduct. And ritam as truthful words. Cleanliness means detachment from material actions, not just physical cleanliness. Right? It means not just, it means they are physically clean, according to the rule. But actual cleanliness is attained when you give up. There's detachment from material action. Respectable wealth is possession of dharma, not possessing cows and horses, because you can have those by not following dharma. You know, you just go to your neighbor and take all of his, right? Right? Remember that nice donkey we were talking about this morning, right? Yeah. Therefore, one should... I, the highest form of Bhagavan, the son of Vasudeva, am sacrifice. Right? So everything is for attaining him. One should not think that horse sacrifices, which give temporary results, are sacrifice. Though, therefore, worship of Krishna, that's real sacrifice. Right? That's the actual. Giving donations means that, after a festival, one reveals to one's dear friends one's experience of bliss during kirtan. Okay. And if you have no bliss, that's when you start giving money. I really hope I get some bliss today. I don't have much money.
Is there a danger there, like sahaja-wise?
Reveals to one's dear friends.
Oh, right.
Not just everybody.
No, yeah, everyone. Yeah,
it's not this go tell it on the mountain one. Yeah. It does not mean giving away money or jewels, right? In other words, why is that the best donation? Because if you've experienced actual taste in kirtan, you discuss that with others, what's that going to do? Inspire them in taste in the kirtan. So gaining taste in the kirtan, that is the real benefit. The other things are temporary. Strength or bala means to control what is difficult to control. Thus, pranayama is strength because it controls the mind, which is most difficult to control. Right? So pranayama, the purpose is to control the mind. Right? Because when the mind's controlled, then you can bring the senses in from their sense objects. So that's real control, when you control the mind. Sri Krishna continued, actual opulence is my own nature as the personality of Godhead, through which I exhibit the six unlimited potencies. Right? So that's actual opulence. So no one can claim to be too opulent. So. The supreme gain in life is devotional service to me. And actual education is nullifying the false perception of duality within the soul. Right? That's education. When you can remove the concept of duality, that we see the material world and good, bad, and all these things. We see things in connection with Krishna. That's actual education. Right? So that means this canto is like real education. Because it's showing that. So we're clear. Real modesty is to be disgusted with improper activities. Right? So it's not just that you're... Because you have people that are very humble or this or that, because they're just too shy or no confidence or anything like that. But it's when modesty, you don't like improper things. That's why you don't do them. Therefore, you're not outrageous. Right? Yeah. And beauty is to possess good qualities such as detachment. That's actual beauty. Because you see, is that the appearance isn't the main thing. You have the form. That can express beauty. But it itself isn't specifically the beauty. Right? Like sometimes it's mentioned that something happens, so then they lost all their bodily luster. So that's the point. They won't be manifesting beauty at that time. So, yeah. So good qualities, then that's the... Real happiness is to transcend material happiness and unhappiness. Or transcend material happiness and unhappiness. And real misery is to be implicated in searching for sex pleasure. Because that, because the point is that takes unlimited, what do you call it? Arrangements, endeavor, thought, and that. So it's just, it's a, hellish condition of consciousness. So even though in the modern thing you think that that guy who's there and has so much facility, so much association and all this, that they're really enjoying, but it's actually the most miserable condition. That's the mode of ignorance. It reverses things. A wise man is one who knows the process of freedom from bondage. And a fool is one who identifies with his material body and mind. Right? You know, no one to say, well, what about me? You know, I've done so much for the, you know, for the society. What about me? So that's foolish. Because you could get the benefit of doing that all for pleasing Krishna. But then if we want to, The real path in life is that which leads to me. And the wrong path is sense gratification, by which consciousness is bewildered. Right? So that means not in connection with him. Actual heaven is the predominance of the mode of goodness, whereas hell is the predominance of ignorance. Right? So if people don't know about Krishna, it will be hell. Guaranteed. Prabhupada's statement, then that means there's a lot of ignorance in London, right?
Yep.
Okay, so then Krishna said, I am everyone's true friend, acting as the spiritual master of the entire universe. And one's home is the human body. So if you want to know where home is, home is where the heart is, right? It's in your body, so that's where that is. My dear friend Uddhava, one who is enriched with good qualities is actually said to be rich. And one who is unsatisfied in life is actually poor. A wretched person is one who cannot control his senses, whereas one who is not attached to sense gratification is a real controller. One who attaches himself to sense gratification is the opposite, a slave. Right? Because we say, oh, he's such a controller. But one is either they're controlling our senses, so yes, they are a controller. We don't like that. Or they're controlling things for their own benefit. And so we don't like that, because what about our benefit? Right? One who attaches himself to sense gratification is the opposite, a slave. Thus, Uddhava, I have elucidated all of the matters about which you inquired. There is no need for a more elaborate description of these good and bad qualities, since to constantly see good and bad is itself a bad quality. Right? To go in and analyze so much and all that, then that's because we're not seeing it in connection to Krishna. Like you see here, what Krishna has given, you can see it's just right there. It's either directly spoken how it's connected to Krishna, or it's that one, all you have to do is connect that. Right. So it's just, all it is to see that you're engaged in Krishna's service very nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. The best quality is to transcend material good and evil. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Ornamentation means good qualities such as detachment, not having a crown or jewels. Happiness is overcoming suffering and unhappiness. Oh, and suffering and happiness. Right? So happiness is overcoming the material suffering and coming to the transcendental. Becoming indifferent to them. Right? If the situation is nice, it's fine. And if it's not nice, it's fine. Either situation, you'll be absorbed in Krishna. Right? Suffering's expecting enjoyment of objects, not suffering from burns. Right? Because those just burn the body, it goes away. But the other ones, then they burn the whole your consciousness, everything. A learned person is he who knows how to become liberated from bondage, not he who lectures on scriptures. Right? So that's the main, the practical difference is scholarship is taken as learning, but actually it's knowing the difference between matter and spirit and how to get out of the material world. Sadhu here means suitable for liberation. You've asked me to discern good and bad qualities. I will speak of their qualities in brief. Please listen. What is the use of describing them elaborately? This much should be described only, since it is a fault to see good and bad qualities. The real quality is to have a nature devoid of seeing good and bad qualities. Right? It's just what's Krishna conscious. This will be explained at the end of the next chapter. Okay, so then in light of this point, remember when we always say we're going along and it's going very peacefully? And then we get into something, you know, get into some issue and then it really goes and like that. If you see it in the context of that, it's because we're looking at good and bad qualities. Mm-hmm. You know, because when we get to Varnashram, it's good and bad, how I'll get benefit like this, how I'll be situated. And so that's what we see, is that it, when we just see the philosophy, it just goes very smoothly. This will be explained at the end of the next chapter. Right? So this detail of this point, will then Krishna is going to give more later. Conclusion. When one no longer sees the 28 separated material elements, which arise from a single cause, but rather see the cause itself, the personality of Godhead, at that time one's direct experience is called vijnana, or self-realization. Okay, so it's about seeing Krishna. It's not this in connection. You see Krishna, and this is connected to him. Does that make sense? We start by the process of whatever we know, connecting that to Krishna, but ultimately it comes to the point where it's all Krishna, and then we apply that, you know, into the area we're conscious with, the area within where we're going to be rendering service. So,
So can we say that basically we shift the center?
Yes, we shift the center from ourselves, including Krishna, to Krishna, including ourselves. That's the Sarva Dharma Paritya aspect. Because religion means something acting according to its nature. So we're looking at something. It's come from Krishna. The laws are by Krishna. But we're looking at it, how it works, how the mechanics of it, and the right and wrong of application. As opposed to that it's about Krishna, and then pleasing Krishna, then to do that in this situation, it would be done like this. Does that make sense? So it's not about the religion, it's about Krishna. Like that. So religion's good, but the problem is it's good is that it's connected to Krishna. But if it's just on its own, then that becomes the good and bad that Krishna's talking about. Right? Because then you just become a nice materialist. Like that. A self-realized person who has cultivated scriptural knowledge up to the point of enlightenment, and who is free from impersonal speculation, understanding the material universe to be simply illusion, should surrender unto the Lord both that knowledge and the means by which he achieved it. Actual religious principles are stated to be those that lead one to devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Right? So religious principle that's not leading you to Krishna, we don't really call that a religious principle. It's it being applied so it leads to Krishna. That's religious, right? Because that's sadhana. Real knowledge is the awareness that reveals his all-pervading presence, right? Because that's the knowledge you have. Then it's just about him. The supreme gain in life is devotional service to him. Reality is seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere. The real path in life is that which leads to him. And the wrong path is sense gratification, by which consciousness is bewildered. So we see in this, that's giving the essence of his essence. Right? Because this is the directly connected to him part. And the other is then showing where that comes in your life, how it'll be applied. What Krishna said the second time, because he said this before, then Uddhava asked, and then we had these answers. Because these show how you apply that in your life. It means this, not that. Ornamentation means good qualities, not jewels and gold. There's no need for an elaborate description of good and bad qualities, since to constantly see good and bad is itself a bad quality. The best quality is to transcend material good and evil by devotional service. This quality resides in the Lord's devotees. That's why they're so nice, because they're not trying to see good and bad. They're seeing devotional service. So then someone's inclined, then they you know, encourage that. So, yeah. Chapter 20. Pure devotional service surpasses knowledge and detachment. Dialogue overview. In the last verse of the previous chapter, the Lord stated that to constantly see good and bad qualities is itself a bad quality. In the Vedic literatures, there's an outlook of duality based on such concepts as the Varnashram system, and at the same time, the Vedas reject this dualistic vision. Uddhava, right, so means they're saying you use Varnashram, which establishes what should be done and not done. All, yama, niyama is showing that. But at the same time, as you want to give up the concept of what's good and what's bad. So then if those two are to be reconciled, that means what the Dharma is saying is it's how to, it leads to Krishna. Does that make sense? So good means Krishna conscious. Bad means not Krishna conscious. Yes?
So Maharaj, we know that on the absolute level, on the Uttama Adhikari, he doesn't discriminate between good and bad. Madhyama and Kanishka, they always discriminating.
Yes, but we see the difference in, like we see Srila Prabhupada, he's acting as a Madhyama.
Yeah.
Right? And then you have other devotees, you know, that are on the Madhyam platform acting as Madhyamas, and you have neophytes acting as Madhyamas.
Yes.
So, in this, they're seeing what's right and wrong, but the difference may come. Not, you know, just to give some difference, is that the Uttama will only see it right and wrong and how much is favorable to devotional service or not. The Madhyama will see that to some degree, but then also, you know, the aspect of what's in the mode of goodness and this and that. The neophyte, then, not that they can't see in those ways, but they may tend to see it according to what's right and wrong for, you know, getting actual proper material benefit or not. You know, it's just like when you say, I'm just being practical, you know, in the management. Then the thing is, okay, you got the service done, and so technically it was done right. But since it's the devotion that Krishna appreciates, was the devotion encouraged, you know, in oneself and in the devotees? Or was it just the mechanical point? You know what I'm saying? So if people are committed to pleasing Krishna, and so then you just guide them how to technically do that, you know, by the mechanics of what they're doing, then that's fine. Right? But if it's thought that by doing these mechanics nicely, that it in itself is therefore devotional service, rather not the consciousness, then that's where we've fallen into right and wrong. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, these community discussions and talking of good qualities and all these things, but they're seen in context of right and good and bad, not in devotional service. Right? And it's taken that, well, devotional service is good, qualities are good, so therefore qualities are devotional service. That's the, you know, it appears to be that logic is used. Yeah. So it's thought, and it's thought this, oh, but if you're manifesting bad qualities, it can't be devotional service, because devotional service is just good. Right? So God is good, right? You know, and, you know, chocolate is good, so God is chocolate.
I mean, it's not far off.
You're good. Okay. Yeah, but now does that mean he's dark chocolate, milk chocolate, or white chocolate?
It's just chocolate.
Just chocolate. Doesn't matter. Because you're seeing equally, with equal vision, all varieties of chocolate.
It's like the Bhagavad Gita picture with all the faces. You know, you have all the types of chocolate. They're all just different manifestations.
Okay, so then you prefer the mixed thing of the mint balls, then.
They're pretty good.
I'm saying because they have the variety.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah?
Yeah.
And he's thinking, yeah, then there's Godiva. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay? So this is where it gets very. We can see now. You can see another reason why this is at this point in the discussion, in the 11th canto, not earlier, because the point is that until one's accepted that it's all about Krishna, you actually can't see with this vision. And so if you technically mention that, it doesn't go down well. Like you noticed that today's Monday? You know, I don't know, yesterday's class, you discussed these things in the temple. Zero questions, you know. And, you know, at the normal time, because you have questions go on for the next half hour, 40 minutes. Nothing. You know, say a little, nothing. Because it just does not compute. Yeah. So it's because you're having to be able to see as reality is what's connected to Krishna. And lack of reality, what's not. Because we're used to non-reality and then trying to say what's real or not within that. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you have, let's say, a novel. It's fiction from beginning to end. But you'll say it's a good one or not because it's more realistic or it's more believable. It's all nonsense. You know, so we make that distinction. This lack of reality is better than that lack of reality. So that's the good and bad or good and evil that we're talking about here. It has to be, it's connected to Krishna, that's real. It's not connected to Krishna, it's not real. Yeah. Uddhava desiring to understand the reason why scriptures contain such apparently conflicting ideas and how these are reconciled, inquires from Lord Krishna about this matter. Right? Because people will say, oh, but this says that, that one says this, like that. In response, the Lord replies that the Vedas describe the process of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga for facilitating the attainment of liberation. Pratigya. If somehow or other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting Krishna's glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with or nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to Him. Because it's very important. It says, oh, so all this is nonsense. So then one's disgusted with material. It says he's not very disgusted nor attached. He's not attached nor very disgusted. Because otherwise it goes into, again, the conditioning and the good and bad of the material world. It's just that it's not important to devotional service, therefore you don't get involved.
That's the neophyte actually being disgusted with material life. That's when you take it up, right?
Yes, but so it has its advantage.
Yeah, but in an early stage.
Yes, but as you go, it changes. That's the whole point. That's why we've been pointing out is that these kind of philosophies that come up that are based on our conditioned upadis and trying to make that the central feature of the devotional process, then they're very, very beginning stages of devotional activity, because generally, you know, it's a matter of that aspect of surrendering to Krishna is why you're taking up and getting the faith, right? Because otherwise, if you can just be whatever you're doing, then why get involved with what we're doing? You know, how prestigious is that? You know, you can do so many other things. It's much more prestigious. You know what I'm saying? If you're just going to remain the way you are, and not really get into any rituals or anything like that, there's already so many people that are doing that, you know. Plus, at least you get a little exercise out of it, or you make some contacts, you know, like that, or, you know, it's peaceful, you know. So the difficulty comes is that we try to take and use logic and try to make them sound as if they're bona fide, you know, strong positions. In fact, not only equal to the tradition, but actually better. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's like in the 50s, is that you have the natural stuff, but then man has made it better. We synthesize it. It's better. It was sincerely thought that anything man-made was better than. That's why people are giving up their, you know, their traditional stuff for plastic. You know? And then after a few years, they kind of figure out, well, it's not really as good. You know? and then the whole natural movement starts. And now it's, you know, kind of standard. Now everybody is worried about natural and organic. Well, when you were worried about it back in the 60s, then you're a weirdo. Right? And if you go back in time, there was no unnatural. It was all natural. And that they were backwards, archaic. Right? You know? Is that... So that you have to be careful is that one is not taking the external and then making right or wrong based on the external, leaving out the primary or Krishna consciousness. Like that. As a beginning stage, yes, one is external. One is, you know, conscious of the material. So one takes that and adds Krishna. Right? Because it's already Krishna, so just that you're willing to accept the concept of his connection. But with time, then you see it's all Krishna, so then what's the problem? But then to then say, therefore, we don't have to worry about a change our upadis, then that's a total opposite of what the philosophy is actually trying to point out. Because we're taking the highest philosophy and then using it for our own mundane advantage.
So it's only when the upadis are gone.
Yeah.
Then you can start.
Then you, means, and not that you don't recognize. Mm. But the point is it's not because of the upadi. Yeah. Like that. We say it's the upadi, but you know, even by logic you can show how it's not the upadi.
So that's the West Coast disease sometimes.
Yeah, I mean everybody has it to some degree, but they seem to have it more than others. Okay, such a person, if somehow or other by good fortune one develops faith in hearing and chanting Krishna's glories, such a person being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to Krishna. Right? Chapter 20 summarizes questions and answers. She would have asked Sri Krishna questions 1127 of 1123, the Bhagavatam verse. Without seeing the difference between piety and sin, how can one understand your own instructions, the form of Vedic literatures? Which order one to act piously and forbid one to act sinfully? Furthermore, without such authorized Vedic literatures, such which ultimately award liberation, how can human beings achieve the perfection of life? Right? So you see all these rules and regulations, so this point of going beyond that, because we have our idea of going beyond means we don't follow any. But what Krishna said up to now hasn't said that. Every definition he's given is being engaged in Krishna's service. Engaging some aspect of the body, the mind, the words in Krishna's service. Like that. But when we say rise above the rules, we think, oh, I don't have to follow any rules. And I don't like to follow rules, so therefore I'm already a Paramahamsa. Right? So, yeah. Sri Krishna answers this question from verse 6 in this chapter through the end of the next chapter. So it takes a while to.
Multiple.
Yeah. Ajaya Prakashika. In the 20th chapter, jnana, karma, and bhakti are well defined, and the qualifications of each are described with good and bad points. Sardarta Darshini 11:21. The process of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga are meant for gradual elevation. Karma yoga is designed for those persons who are not detached and who are full of gross desires, right? So in other words, upadis. So that's karma yoga. Right? But that sounds bad because you know it's the lowest one. So you try to present it through the platform of jnana yoga and try to sell it as bhakti. Right? Jnana yoga is for those who are detached from the fruits of activity and have given up material endeavors. Right, so then, yeah. And bhakti is for those persons who have taken to the principle of yukta vairagya, appropriate renunciation. Right, so then again, it's not based on our position; it's based on what field you can work in and connecting that to Krishna. As long as one has not become uninterested and enjoy the fruits of one's work, or as long as one's faith in the topics of discussion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead on the path of devotional service has not awakened, then one must continue to fulfill all the prescribed duties of his karma, right? So if you're going to work with it, then you have to do. You can't use bhakti as above and then do karma without rules, without regulation. So as long as there's desire, then all the regulation that goes with it is connected, right? You want to get into the jnani thing, then you have to be detached, right? Bhakti means the two of them are used together, right? But neither the renunciate nor the devotee of the Supreme Lord need carry out ritualistic duties. So that's only if you have desire in that area, then you perform the rituals in that area. Persons who follow their own duty, who abandon that which is forbidden, and who are free from greed and other unhealthy characteristics, attain either monistic knowledge or else, if they are fortunate, devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such knowledge and devotion can be achieved in the human form of life, which is therefore a desirable object both for those living in hell and for the demigods. The human body, even though it awards the whole purpose of existence in the form of knowledge and devotion, is ephemeral. Therefore, one who is discriminating should soberly strive for liberation before death comes. Because after death comes, it's a bit late.
The Yaladut has come.
Yeah, it's somehow or another at that time they're not into negotiation or anything like that. Yeah. The human body is like a boat. Sri Gurudev is the helmsman, and the mercy of the Supreme Lord is the favorable breeze. If a person who has attained such a rare boat in the form of the human body does not desire to cross over the ocean of material existence, he is in fact the killer of the soul. The mind is fickle, but one should not indifferently allow it to act as it will. Right? It's fickle, but it doesn't mean you don't control it and engage it, and you figure out what kind of range of fickleness it functions within and engage that in Krishna's service. Because to go beyond that, then that's wrong. Right? Rather, one should conquer the senses and the vital air, and by intelligence endowed with the qualities of goodness, should bring the mind under control. Until the mind finally becomes stable, one should continue to meditate about the process of the creation of all material things in sequence from subtle to gross, and of their destruction in reverse sequence, gross to subtle. Right? Because some things come from subtle to gross. So because of desire, we have this body. Right? And so therefore, unless we give up the activities, the unfavorable activities of the body, how are we going to get at the subtle? Does that make sense? Destruction goes the other way. Because of course, if you can just, by analyzing it, see that it's useless and give it up, that's best. But if not, then you start from the gross, and then giving that up, then it'll naturally go the other way. Yes? No? Yes.
Prabhupada says in third canto, through sound, entire all other elements come.
Yes.
Till matter.
Right.
So similarly, through sound, we can reverse back.
Reverse back, yes, Krishna, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By hearing about Krishna, that means. Yes, very good. One who has a sense of detachment and renunciation give up false identification with the body and other sense objects by constantly studying the instructions of a spiritual master. Right? You have to have a sense of detachment and renunciation. Then give up false identification. But if you are basing on false identification, then that's because there is no detachment and there is no renunciation. So you can't use the term yukta vairagya. Because there's neither yukta nor vairagya, right? They kind of go together, right? Bread and butter, but there's no bread and no butter, So I said, if we only had some milk, then we could make a banana milkshake. If we only had some bananas,
it's a Buddhist sandwich.
Huh?
Buddhist sandwich.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. And by constantly studying the instruction of the spiritual master, that means studying, so then you're trying to apply. Right? Because so studying is that second stage, manana. That's the second, right? Because you hear, then you study. By the yoga practice of yama, niyama, and so forth, by cultivation of transcendental knowledge, and by worship of and meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can remember the Supersoul. Virtue or guna means to remain steadfast in the object of one's particular platform of qualification. Yeah. So guna is being steady in one's own platform of qualification, where one says, no, but I could do this or that, why I'm restricted in that, that's not virtue. By developing the desire to reject one's accumulated material association, by pursuing the injunctions of what is good and what is bad, all of one's inauspicious material activities become diminished. By devotional service, so we see it gets up to a point, but at one point it's left. So that point, we see, is the point of liberation. Right? Because we're talking about the liberated soul will think like this. So it doesn't mean you're not seeing the distinction, but it's always in connection with devotional service. If we're seeing distinction not connected to Krishna, it'll just be distracting. By devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all perfections are achieved. Anyone who renders service to the Supreme Lord by constant devotional service will be able to steadily fix his mind upon the Supreme Lord, and thus all desires for sense gratification sitting within the heart will be destroyed to the root. Right? So you have to be willing to let that go. You focus on Krishna, they will go. Mm-hmm. But if you're focusing on Krishna and want to maintain them, they won't go. Mm-hmm. Right? But Krishna will arrange that it become more and more difficult for you to hold on. Right?
Very kind.
Yeah. It means that your rationalizations after a while start to sound not very rational. Yeah. When one directly perceives the presence of the Supreme Lord, his false ego becomes completely eradicated. So any false identity means you see the Lord. Right? All of his doubts are shattered, and heaps of material activities become diminished to nil. For this reason, the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not consider knowledge and renunciation of the means for achieving the highest benefit. Right? Means they're supportive, they're secondary elements, but the devotion is the primary. That's the main one. Right? So the renunciation is only beneficial because you're giving up the material, then you can take spiritual. Only in the heart of a person who is devoid of material desire and disinterested in material things can devotional service to the Lord arise. Right? So we have some that giving up of desire, disinterest. Then we see is that amount of devotion can come. And so that's the sadhana process, is slowly turning the mind from the material to Krishna. And the more we do that, then the quicker the process will go. The piety and impiety that result from ritualistic injunctions and prohibitions cannot be applied to the unalloyed pure devotees of the Supreme Lord. But there's no interest. They're just doing things to please Krishna. That's Shloka Anushana. Verses 1 to 37. Karma, Jnana, and Bhakti. So there's only one section. Yeah, okay. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear lotus-eyed Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord, and thus the Vedic literatures, consisting of positive and negative injunctions, constitute your order. Such literatures focus upon the good and bad qualities of work." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, "At the end of the last chapter, Krishna said that one should overcome seeing good and bad. Though Uddhava understood the Lord's meaning, he desires to hear from the Lord's mouth an explanation with various examples." Right? Because otherwise, how do we understand? Because we've heard, okay, but it's still not clear what this is or how you do it. Thus, in five verses, he opposes Krishna's statement. Uddhava said, "Your orders, the Vedas, constitute of orders and prohibitions. The orders concern good qualities of action which should be done. The prohibitions concern bad actions which are forbidden. By following orders, one performs good acts of piety and goes to swarg. By performing prohibited acts, one performs bad actions of sin and goes to hell." Right? So one has to consider what prohibited acts did one perform to end up in
London.
Yes. Sri Uddhava continued. Yes. But at the same time, it's what piety you've done that now you've come to the transcendental realm. So that contemplation, contemplation. Sri Uddhava continued, differences in varna and ashram give rise to bad or good, such as pratiloma and anuloma marriages. There's consideration of good and bad objects, places, ages, and times. Swarga is considered good, and hell is considered bad. So these are the five, verses in which he appears to be opposing what Krishna said. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, the differences of varna and ashram indicate the good and bad qualities. Pratiloma means a person such as Suta or Vaidehaka, born from women of superior varna and man of inferior varna. Anuloma means a person such as Ambasta or Karana, born from a man of superior varna and woman of lower varna. Right, because if it's only one degree, it will be whatever that lower degree is. Like a Brahmin and a Kshatriya, in Anuloma, then you get a Kshatriya, or Kshatriya and a Vaishya, you get a Vaishya, Vaishya, Shudra, Shudra. So then when it gives a name, that means then in Anuloma, it has to be more than one degree, it has to be 2 degrees or more. Right? And so he's being nice, he's mentioning the 2 degrees. Right? There are also superior or inferior considerations for objects. Swarga is considered good and hell is considered bad. Thus Sri Uddhava gives examples of how the Vedas deal with good and bad. Sri Uddhava continued, without seeing the difference between piety and sin, how can one understand your own instructions in the form of Vedic literatures, which order one to act piously and forbid one to act sinfully? Furthermore, without such authorized Vedic literatures, which ultimately award liberation, how can human beings achieve the perfection of life? My dear Uddhava, in order to understand those things beyond direct experience, such as spiritual liberation or attainment of heaven and other material enjoyments beyond our present capacity, and in general to understand the means and ends of all things, the forefathers, demigods, and human beings must consult the Vedic literatures, which are your own laws, for these constitute the highest evidence and revelation. My dear Lord, the distinction observed between piety and sin comes from your own Vedic knowledge and does not arise by itself. Right, so it's not coming from something else other than the Vedic literature. If the same Vedic literature subsequently nullifies such distinction between piety and sin, there will certainly be confusion. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, Uddhava says, either way there are difficulties. From the Vedas, which are your order, composed of rules and prohibitions, arises observation of good and bad. But then I disregard your order. By rejecting your own orders, the Vedas, the vision of good and bad, will be impaired. I have become confused, since I have not been able to discern your intentions. Therefore, remove this confusion. Right? But it mentioned before, he understands, but he's making it clear so that others, right? Because this whole conversation between Krishna and Uddhava is about how, after Krishna's disappearance, then everyone will be benefited. So then it has to be clear. Right? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, okay, so that was 3 through 5. Okay. Because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented 3 paths of advancement. The path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion. Besides these 3, there is absolutely no other means of elevation. Okay.
Political correctness?
Yeah, no, it somehow or another doesn't fit into here. Because it doesn't work. It's not based on knowledge. And, you know. Yeah, so.
Krishna also tells about these things. Come about the 3 modes in the 2nd chapter. And the 3rd chapter starts with Karma Yoga.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Same.
Yes, same kind. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. There will be injunctions and prohibitions based on seeing good and bad according to different qualifications and different situations. The Lord speaks to reveal this. The methods of jnana, karma, and bhakti are explained by me through the Brahmakanda, Karmakanda, and Devata Kandas. With the desire to give humans moksha, artha, dharma, kama, and prema, all by my mercy, I have explained these methods. There are no other means of elevations except these three. Right? Because Krishna is saying this, so one can't oppose this. That's the whole point. He's infallible, so what he says and does works. Whatever we do seems to not be as infallible. Right? Austerity and yoga are actually included in jnana and bhakti to some degree, so are not considered separately. Karma is for the karmis and jnana is for the jnanis. They are not qualified for pure bhakti. Right? So that's where you talk about karma yoga. Right? The karma kanda, that's for karmis. The jnana kanda is for jnanis. But karma yoga, jnana yoga, this is for devotees who just happen to have that aspect of conditioning to deal with. Right? Sri Krishna continued. Among these three paths, jnana yoga, the path of philosophical speculation, is recommended for those who are disgusted with material life and are thus detached from ordinary fruitive activities. Right? So you can't use all that logic and all that. Then it brings it down to karma. Right? Those who are not disgusted with material life, having many desires yet to fulfill, should seek perfection through the path of karma yoga. If some or other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Who is qualified for what? Two verses answer. Jnana is for persons who are unattached to house and family and therefore renounce material actions of household life. Karma is for those who are not detached from material action because they are extremely attached to enjoying the body, house, and wife. By taking into account the explanation in the first canto, the meaning of the first phrase in verse 8 is, quote, the person who has developed faith in my topics for unexpected association with great devotees. For the person who has developed faith in my topics by unexpected association with great devotees. Right? So that's the whole idea of the preaching and all these things. Faith in the Lord's topics is the qualification for bhakti yoga. Right? So if you always have to adjust them, then that means it's mixed. But if one's comfortable with the as they are, then that's bhakti. Now within that, then how you're able to apply according to your adhikar. That has already been stated in the Shraddhamrita Katayam Me, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:19-20, and Shraddhalur Me Kata Srinvan, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:11-23. The context is different in the present verse, however. By using the singular number, one person, it is indicated that such a person who has developed that faith is very rare compared to jnanis and karmis. So it must be in when he's talking about bhakti and someone developing that faith, he's using the singular. On the others, he must be using the plural. Like there's just tons of karmis and jnanis. Because there's only three paths. So in this world, you just see the two. The devotional service, that's rare. Right? So someone who's taken that up, gotten that faith, and is following the order of guru, like Krishna said before. That, then, is a rare thing. This person is not overly attached to body, house, and family. Not overly, they may be some attached. Well, that's where the karma yoga comes in. But they're not overly. Like the karmis can't because they're overly attached. Right? The jnani is unattached, so he can't deal in that function, that sphere. He's also not disgusted with the world, for that is the qualification for jnana. Right? Being overly attached to body and house qualifies the person for karma yoga. If he does not have such attachment, he becomes qualified for bhakti. So he's not overly attached to the material. He's not overly disgusted with the material. Then he can do bhakti. Because then, if you're disgusted, then you can't work with anything. You can't perform any activities for Krishna. And if you're overly attached, then all those activities will be mixed. There'll be something for yourself. So bhakti means it's not overly attached nor overly disgusted. Right? Perfect blend. The qualification for the three processes should be considered. The cause of disgust with or attachment from the world is purification of the antakarana caused by nishkam karma. Right? So the subtle body becomes purified by doing work without attachment. So that's how these things come about. The cause of excessive attachment is beginningless ignorance. Right? So nishkam karma yoga will bring about giving up attachment to the material world. And the cause of excessive, that's total ignorance. Right? The cause of being devoid of excessive attachment is unexpected association with great devotees. These causes should be considered. However, there are some special persons who become qualified. Even if a person is involved with sense enjoyment, by unexpected association of devotees, he becomes qualified. So, they may be engaged in their regular material activities, but then coming in contact with the devotees, they get inspired in Krishna consciousness. No, technically they don't qualify. So that's the whole point, is that it's there. So then if we look at that, then what was the whole point of the means before? You had so many coming in their background because they were not overly attached to the material world, means to the regular social prestige and money and all those kind of things. But at the same, you know, and they had some interest in philosophy at the same time as they weren't disgusted with it. They were quite happy to sit around and, you know, enjoy themselves. So that point coming in contact then with the devotees, then it made them very easy to take advantage of this position. But we see as those not from that position also got the same benefit because of that advancement, that association with advanced devotees. So therefore the key is the advanced devotion. I mean association with those who are advanced. Sri Krishna continued. As long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtan, and Vishnu, one has to act according to the regular principles of the Vedic injunctions. Right? So, he's not given up these things, fruitive activities, and he hasn't awakened his taste for devotional service, then he'll follow the Vedic injunctions. That's how it'll work. Because he sees good and bad, because otherwise you're not satiated fruit of activity. What does that mean? That means something else is good that I haven't attained yet, or not enough of it, and things that I don't really consider that great, I've attained plenty of, and I'm trying to avoid that. Right? So working in that, then you have to follow the rules. Since you're making good and bad based on your own subjectivity, therefore you follow the authority of the Veda, because that's Krishna. Right? Then, with time, that's not what's important. It's just about pleasing Krishna. So it appears that they give up those things, but they're situated in pure goodness. So what will they do wrong? Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. It is natural that the overly attached jiva is qualified for karma. Right? When will he become qualified for jnana and bhakti? He should perform his daily and periodic duties, karmani, as long as he not purified his heart by karmas and has not become detached. Thus, when he becomes detached, he becomes qualified for jnana. This was stated in verse 7. Or, he should continue his karmas until faith and topics of the Lord arise by sudden mercy of the devotees. Right? So, in other words, those who are attached function in karma. And they're going to keep doing that until they've either performed all the karmas very nicely, right, with the right attitude and that they become detached so they take up karma, or they come in contact with the pure devotees and by that association, then they take up devotional service. Right? Before that faith, he was qualified only for karma. When faith appears, as explained in the previous verse, he becomes qualified only for bhakti. He is no longer qualified for karma. Right? That's why things don't go so fabulous. You know, everyone talks about it, gets together and this and that, then they sit back and get proud of it, and it all falls apart. Right? Yeah. So that's the point is that devotees are no longer technically qualified for karma. So they just perform the duties because that's the position they're supposed to do. And then results will come according to Krishna's pleasure, right? And his mercy. Better? Yeah. His pleasure. That's whimsical. Mercy. Ah, that's good. Okay. Yes. This faith should be exclusive. The person has, right, remember before Krishna said he's not qualified for karma jnana? Right? So it means he's only qualified for bhakti because he has that faith. Right? The person has firm faith that he will reach perfection by hearing about the Lord, not by karma jnana. Footnote 9. Shraddha is confident, firm faith that by rendering transcendental loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. Such faith is favorable to the discharge of devotional service. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22:62. This arises only by association with pure devotees. It won't come up any other way. Because you can say, well, what about with the Lord? But the point is we're associating with the Lord at every moment. He's in our heart. Right? So it's only when we meet the devotees, that's when we take it seriously. It is said, the Shruti and Smriti literatures are to be understood as my injunctions, and one who violates such codes is to be understood as violating my will, and thus opposing me. So I guess that kind of gets rid of the, oh, this is archaic, or it's Indian, or it's only for, you know. Although such a person may claim to be my devotee, he is not actually a Vaishnav. Moving on. Thus, the devotee does not disobey the Lord's order. Rather, when he develops faith, he will never disobey the orders of the Lord. And he'll always try his best to do his duties. So he has that faith. Because he has that faith, if he pleases Krishna, then he will attain to the transcendental position. It's not a maybe. You know, it's not like karma jnana. It's that you do this, it will happen. Why? Because Krishna, we saw before. Because he surrenders to Krishna, and therefore offers everything to Krishna, then Krishna, because of his compassion to the devotees, always reciprocates to the devotee. And so then there's no doubt about that. Some persons say that even if he does not attain the mercy of great devotees, and consequently does not develop that faith, on seeing the excellence of other devotees, not great devotees, he gives up karma and takes up worship of the Lord, following his orders. So even from seeing others who are not great devotees, you become inspired. Right? So that's what we saw before, is that so many just neophyte devotees go out preaching and they make devotees. Right? They bring, one, they're speaking the instructions given by the founder. Right, so then they and it has that chit potency. But the point is just by seeing the others who themselves aren't necessarily great, then one takes up the worship. Right? He gives up the karma and takes up worship of Krishna. So that's the thing. It's a perfect system. What we have to understand is how to, what is karma and jnana, and how they can assist in devotional service, but they don't make devotional service. Others say that since Shruti and Smriti recommend bhakti, not varnashram, a person understanding this takes to bhakti, even if he does not meet the greatest devotee. For the Lord says, a person who, understanding good and bad aspects of dharma as taught by me, gives up all his duties and simply worships me is the best of all. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:11-32. Right, so it's all about Krishna, right? The good and bad, it's about Krishna. Do we come across it? Do you know where it is, that verse in the 11th canto? Sway, sway, dharma. I don't know. That he's saying good, pious and impious is based on his connection to Krishna.
It reminds me about the verse from Gita.
No, it's from 11th canto.
I remember we've discussed it before.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe also in Gita. I mean, the two Gitas, so naturally probably both places. So.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if we're, where that comes in. Devotees may think that, since they are devotees following purely, it is not necessary to follow injunctions and prohibitions in Shruti and Smriti, such as vows like Ekadasi and forbidden acts like putting coconut water in a metal bell metal vessel, or putting yogurt or milk in a copper vessel, or eating the Lord's offerings before offering to the Lord. However, understanding that Shruti and Smriti are the Lord's order, they should follow those instructions. But they're following because they're the Lord's instructions. Before that, you're following because it's right and wrong. That's the difference. One does it, this is right, this is wrong. Because you can relate. One gives good benefits, one doesn't. But the other is that it's the Lord's order. To please the Lord, you follow his order.
The false ego is gone.
Yeah, because there's no ego. So there's no identity with those. So that means then that not following is you're not making those distinctions based on any kind of upadis or that. It's all being based upon, it's simply its connection to the Lord. And so then it becomes, yeah. Okay. So no one's putting coconut water in a bell metal vessel, right?
Barbaric.
Yes. Or yogurt and milk in a copper vessel. Okay. Some pure devotees in the eastern provinces, because of the pressure from karmis with which they have close contact, may perform karmas. But this is not actually performance of karma, because it is done without faith in those acts. The Lord says, Ashradhaya hutam dattam tapas tapta kritam chayat. Asad it yuche ut. Asad it yuchate parta nachatat pretya no iha. O son of Prita, whatever is offered in the fire, whatever is given in charity, whatever is undertaken as austerity, but which is done without faith, is called asat because it bears no result now or in the next life. Right? So they don't have faith in it. It won't bear material fruit. They only have faith in Krishna. The BBT purport states, Srila Jiva Goswami points out in this regard that when a person fully surrenders to Lord Krishna, he takes shelter of the Lord's promise to liquidate all other responsibilities and debts of the surrendered soul. The devotee thus becomes fearless by meditating on the Lord's promise of protection. Those, however, who are materially attached are frightened by the prospect of full surrender to the Supreme Personality Godhead, thereby revealing their inimical mentality towards the Lord. Right? So they don't want to surrender. They're frightened by that. So they won't take up devotional service. The devotee takes it up, so they don't have that at least consciously inimical. But there's some, you know, because of conditioning, it takes time. You know, just, is that, yeah. Sri Krishna continued, My dear Uddhava, a person who is situated in his prescribed duty, properly worshipping by Vedic sacrifices, but not desiring the result of such worship, will not go to the heavenly planets. Like it said, if you don't have faith, it won't take you there. The karmi does it, has faith it'll take him to the heavenly planet, it will take him there. The devotee does it, but just as part of the prescribed duty, but without faith that, you know, that's there. He just is it pleasing Krishna. Right? Because that karma has been described in Veda. Veda is coming from Krishna. Therefore, then it's Krishna's order.
What if some attachments remain, like social position and stuff? I mean, you're a devotee trying to serve Krishna, but there's still some attachments remaining to whatever it is, activities you're performing.
But what's the context? I didn't...
Whether that will take you to the heavenly planets or Vrindavan.
That...
Because I believe there was a quote by Prabhupada that some of the devotees might probably end up in the heavenly planets rather than spiritual planets.
Well, you weren't here this morning where they were actually asking for percentages, so...
No. See, I like to keep it vague.
To keep it vague, because you don't like the odds.
No.
Okay, yeah. That's fair, because Krishna says in the Gita, the devotee, the neophyte who has that attachment to his material things, if he doesn't remember Krishna at the time of death, then he'll naturally go to, you know, the heavenly planets and then be absorbed in that particular distraction. Right? And then when that time is over, then he'll come back here and be born in a, you know, rich, aristocratic, you know, well-placed families. Because then they have facility and they could take up Krishna consciousness. Right? That's the, like that. Yeah, so it can happen, but if you remember Krishna, then that won't happen. You'll go back to Godhead. So it's just a matter if you remember Krishna or not. Right? Similarly, by not performing forbidden activities, he will not go to hell. So he doesn't do the forbidden, so he won't go to hell. And he has no... But whatever he's doing in the pious, he doesn't want any material benefits from it. So he's not going to go to the heavenly planets to get the material benefits. Right? So he's following those things because what should be avoided. And doing those things that should be done. But he's not doing them with faith in the material benefits. He's doing it because of the service to Krishna. One who is situated in his prescribed duty, free from sinful activities, and cleansed of all material contamination, in this very life obtains transcendental knowledge, or, by good fortune, devotional service unto me. So transcendental knowledge means that which gets him beyond the material world, or, by fortune, then he meets the devotees, then devotional service to me. Right? So then he could get liberated. So you see, this canto is dealing with transcendentalists. So whether they're the great sages, you know, who are just liberated, or the devotees who then are on the devotional platform. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. What does this performer of karma attain? Situated on this planet, performing his duties, sinless because of performing nishkam karma, pure in heart because of no sin, he attains jnana and liberation. If he unexpectedly attains the association with persons practicing pure bhakti, he attains pure bhakti to me. Then he attains prema. If he attains association with karma mistra bhaktas or jnana mistra bhaktas, by that type of bhakti, he attains shantarati. Right? So then if he attains someone who's beyond that, then it'll take him beyond. So that's why the importance of we're hearing from acharyas. So then at least we're hearing from the pure devotees. So then the attainment of pure bhakti may work out better. Yes? No? Kind of? You have 1 minute and 20 seconds.
Some claim that we are, you know, Rupa Nukas.
Yes.
And we are simultaneously Raganukas. So they say it's a subtle difference between those two. It means if we say we are Raganukas, then it's a general description, but Rupa Nugas means going into Manjari Bhav.
Oh, I see. So that, I was wondering where it's going. Rag simply means attachments to Krishna. And that gaining that is through the directions that Lord Chaitanya gave to Rupa Goswami. But you can go wherever you want. Why do you have to be a Manjari? That's what they're saying it means that, but I haven't heard it said, because you see, in Nectar Devotion, he's describing all the various aspects, all five rasas. You know? So the point is because as it is, even we say Braja Bhakti, it's a generic aspect first, then the specific. You know, the sex being made is specific first. So rag is... Lord Chaitanya is describing that, and then that's being then given to Rupa Goswami through, down from him down through the parampara. Then it comes, right? Because he's the one who actually means the preaching mission. You know what we can say now is, you know, is ISKCON that started by Rupa Goswami, like that. So he started the organization, the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya. And Jiva Goswami then formalized it. Right? And then there was a president, and that president's been coming down, and those presidents are mentioned in the Parampara. like that. So it's there. He establishes. So why do you have to put it like that? Because then the difficulty with that is then you're saying, well, I'm not Rupanuga, I'm not Majarya, Raganuga. So therefore, I don't have to follow Rupa. I can follow whoever I like. And then who's this whoever you like going to be?
So they don't say we can follow whoever, but if we're claiming to be Rupanugas, we got to be Manjaris.
Yeah, but who said that? Where does that come from?
Speculation.
Yeah, speculation. Because there's a good chance that they're not eating Cracker Jacks, and then in the Cracker Jacks, a little prize, and then that, or at the fortune cookie at the Chinese restaurant. Said if you're a Rupanuga, then you've got to be a Manjari. And so then, you know, that's what the fortune cookie said. Because otherwise, where are they getting these things? You know what I'm saying? That's the problem when we focus too much on the detail. So when devotees get into it, oh, these are higher things than this and that. But those are technical points, but the higher is the taste. Right? You know, otherwise, then it's like the boat that doesn't pull up the anchor. You know? They're rowing, but they're not really getting anywhere too fast. I'm sure that the pleasantness of the oars and the water gave very nice for sleeping and all that. They slept well. You know, moving water is peaceful to the mind, pleasing to the mind. Right? So, yeah, this is said, you know, that's being offered, but that doesn't mean that it's only that. Otherwise, then where are they going to go? Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.